Bill Simmons hosts the most downloaded sports podcast of all time, with a rotating crew of celebrities, athletes, media staples, and a slew of other friends and family members who always happen to be available. Check out the Bill Simmons podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire, you're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
What I love about it, Moose, is because King Kong's always been a good guy for me.
Yeah.
And in the last film, Godzilla was a good guy.
He was a good guy, yeah. He basically
Godzilla saved us.
He basically, what Warren G said.
He regulated.
That's he regulated. He came in.
Godzilla regulated.
Warren Godzilla.
Godzilla, G Warren G. Godzilla. Warren G. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Righty's House on Ringer SC. Hope you're doing well and staying safe. First of all, I want to say thanks to everyone who sent us a message about last week's David Rocastle special. It means a lot. Today, we're going to give flowers to Imanol, who managed Real Sociedad to their first trophy in 34 years at the weekend. We're going to talk about a theory I have about Ronaldo's role for Portugal. And finally, with the European competition returning this week, we're going to chat a little about the difference playing domestically and in Europe. And my guest today is Mr. Moussa Kwanga. How are you doing, Moussa Kwanga?
Very well, thanks. Very well indeed. Good times, good times.
Good flat times? Flat capped up. I didn't wear my hat today. I've got a felt hat today. I felt like my Uncle Charlie. Have I ever told you about my Uncle Charlie, Moose?
No, I don't think so.
My Uncle Charlie used to come to my house every Sunday for dinner, Sunday dinner. And he was just an old Jamaican guy. All the top front of his teeth were gold. Mm. He always wore a three-piece suit, shirt, tie, gold chain watch.
Goodness.
Always looked smart and had an unbelievable felt hat. And the felt hat, when he'd come in, Moose, the felt hat would get put somewhere where it's on display.
Absolutely, of course.
It's on display.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So, you know what I mean? And so every time I wear that hat, I just think of my Uncle Charlie. And it's something that I want to do. Because when I was younger, Moose, I liked the fact that everybody was so smartly dressed. Even when you go back to, obviously you could go back to the 20s, 30s, everybody was smartly dressed. You go 40s, 50s, shirt and ties. Everybody wore suits. I loved the fact that everybody is smart with shirt and tie and suit and stuff. I love that.
There's a statement though, isn't it? It's important, especially like as black people at that time, people don't realize that it's a way of claiming your space at a time when a lot of the world doesn't give you anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that stuff, you know, obviously like being smart is a statement in itself. Mm. I think there's a wider issue. Like I bought a jacket when I'd been in Berlin for a couple of years. I had quite a bad racist incident. I went out and bought myself like a really nice jacket for special occasions.
Mm.
I was like, you know, just makes me feel good at tough times. I thought, you know what? I'm going to start wearing this all the time. And that was the thing for me. When you start treating every day pretty much as a special occasion, then your level of like, the level of swagger just goes.
It just goes
through the roof.
Yeah, but the thing is, Moose, you know. I went through a phase where I was really, I was really afraid, especially before I got to football. I was really afraid of anything that didn't look right for other people. Say, "Oh, look at that! Look at you! And you look terrible." I would not wear that. I would not do that.
Yeah.
And it's really strange because my Uncle Charlie, some of the colors of his suits were amazing. And sometimes when he was wearing normal stuff, you know, we're talking like purples and yellows. Orange on his dark skin with these big gold teeth. He looked...
It's owning it.
Honestly, yeah. It looks amazing. And it's kind of something that as I got older, I started to think about it more and I'm just doing it, man. I'm just putting my stuff because when you wear certain strikers as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you wear certain things, it's people will always try to come at you. It's like I say to people with hats. Yeah. They say, yeah, but hats don't suit me. It's because people are slaughtering them for wearing a hat. And so then people, they take that on and say, I'm not wearing it because people don't like it. Fuck people, man.
You know the difference is? What? It's like in football, right? You know, like when you grow up, everyone's like, man on. Yes. Like it's a thing that's really bad. Mm. And then there comes a point, if you're like a really good player, like, you know, you look at the people like you want the man on.
Mm-hmm.
You want the pressure. So actually there comes a point, the same with clothing. At first you're like, oh no, I don't want the man. I don't want to see me. Yes. Then there comes a point where you're like, oh, people are going to come for you with that hat. They're like, I want them to.
Exactly. Because the thing with the man on is that if you are Iniesta, Scholes, if Zidane and that, you've already seen that the man is coming.
Exactly.
So when the ball's coming, you're already ready. You've already got the picture. Yeah.
But he's already dead.
It took me years. It took me years for some reason to get to the place where I don't care that there's a man on. I don't care what you lot think about what I wear. Right. You know what I mean? And it's the same thing with my girls when they're younger. I literally now, especially when they're younger and to the point now, they literally can put anything they want on in the specs of how they put it together. It doesn't matter. Because what I wanted them to understand is you've got to be happy in yourself with anything what you're doing, what you're projecting. Yes. Be happy with that and own it. People will come. You try to explain to them, people will come and they'll say, oh my God, look at you. Because you're a bit different. And people don't like that. People don't like different. And they will come at you until you own it. If you don't own it, they'll come at you until you change. And then they'll see that they can get to you. You can't let that happen.
Do you know what? As you made a great point. I want to jump in there with something else I noticed. A few years ago, I went to a clothing store. And this is adding to your point. Went to a clothing store. I won't name names because a lot of them do this.
Mm.
And I was looking around all the shelves and looking for something to buy. And I suddenly thought, hang on a minute. I don't want to buy anything in this store because this store is basically designed for a generation of men who are terrified of looking different and terrified of anything that looks like it might be fitted in any way at all.
Mm.
Absolutely terrified. And I thought to myself, what a sad reflection. Like, and I look back at some of the things I bought back then because that's all you could buy.
Mm.
And the clothing is so chunky. It looks like I was wearing an igloo. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like the kind of thing where you go to the bar and there's absolutely no chance you'll stick out wearing it.
Right. Right.
And it's kind of sad. And that was, you know, that wasn't just in the UK. That was a lot of places. The one place I saw that was different was actually Italy. I went to Italy one time to Perugia and it was a Sunday afternoon and everyone in the town goes walking in their nice clothes, right?
Mm.
After church or something. So everyone's already like smart anyway, but there's also that kind of thing of like, you're on display because it's like after church, maybe before lunch, people were flossing.
Yes.
And I was like, that's the energy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the energy to move with. Yeah.
Absolutely. Now look, man, Rude Hullet bigging up your jackets, bro. What about your, you know what one I love? I love the Sergeant. Remember the Sergeant Pepper one I said? I love it.
Oh, I did a photo thing in that, you know?
It's an amazing looking jacket.
Thanks, man. They did like a photo shoot type thing and they were like, oh, what do you want to wear? And I was like, I got to wear that. They're like, really? I said, yeah, because it's a statement.
It's a statement jacket. That's what you want. It's a statement jacket. It's saying, if you wear that jacket, Moose, and you as soon as you walk in, you're saying something.
Oh, who does he think he is?
You know something, speaking of statements, man. Can I got to give flowers to Imanol?
Yeah.
Real Sociedad. Honestly, Musa, I watched the press conference afterwards, even though I couldn't understand what he was saying. Obviously, they put subtitles in it. I knew.
You knew, right.
I knew. And when he'd done it, I swear to God, see, some of the comments are ridiculous because they just do not get it. And I love the people who don't get it. They can't get to that level of love and passion.
Them. It's not for
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
It's not for them.
So some of those, I thought to myself, you know something? You lot are the ones who are not privileged to be in the same sphere as this guy right now because with everything what he's been through at that club from the time he's born in the area, been at the club and played for the club manager, for him to do that in that press conference, and the passion in which he blasted out.
Yes.
What they say and what they sing and the fact that they're not there. Could you imagine what the fans looking at him doing that would have been feeling, Moose? I can't even imagine.
It's goosebumps, isn't it? Because you know what's amazing about it? He generated that passion. It had been hammering with rain. Stadium was empty. So there was nothing really else to go on. There was no, like in terms of background environment, euphoria to draw on, there was basically just like a dressing room of euphoric players and him. Like he didn't have much other energy to draw in. Wow. It wasn't like there was a press room full of journalists who applauded him as soon as he walked in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why the passion was so incredible because he goes from being this like relatively, you know, moderate character, like mild mannered, and he just explodes and you see how much it means. And you see it's 34 years it took the Real Sociedad to win something. And he's been in charge of that team. He's seen them lose their best playmaker to Arsenal on loan. He's been in charge of like brilliant young talent. Yep. He's brought them all through and they've played some of the best football I've seen in Spain in the last 2-3 years.
Right.
And they never had, and I said this on Stadio, they didn't have a trophy to show for it. And it felt like they deserved something for this period. And him knowing they can now look back at that era and be able to say that Real Sociedad, in the middle of a pandemic, when things were so tough for so many people in small towns,
yes,
they brought joy. I was like, I was emotional watching. I was like, if I'm emotional watching this guy, how does it feel being him or being one of his fans, one of the fans of his club?
And the Bilbao as well, they beat. Bilbao, yes, even more so the significance.
That game,
it's amazing.
Against that opposition is incredible.
So you know what? When you look at it, like I say, you have to look at that. And I think to myself, like fans and clubs, and I couldn't help thinking for Imanol and the way it's happened. I read something, Moose, where they asked him about the manager and he said, no, stick with this manager. Even though he could have been the next incumbent. He could have got the job if they got rid of him and that. And he said, no, stick with this manager. There's something about him and everything about him. And, you know, it's one of those things, again, Moose, I wish I knew more. And like now, I will be showing even more interest in him. But he seems like an unbelievable man.
A special character, yeah. Very special. Yeah. You know, when people embody, we talk about people embodying the club. There are some people, you know, like, you know, you look at Arsenal. Mm. There are Arsenal players who retire or they're only there for 2 years, but you're like, that person gets Arsenal.
Yes.
Like, people could be Arsenal for 5 years and not get Arsenal, right? Some have been there for like 2 games and they get it. It could be a fist pump. Yeah. It could be a way they celebrate. Yeah. It could be a knee slide. And there's a certain thing I think with Imanol, it's like, it's the end of a, not the end of a journey because he's still working there, but there's an incredible story arc for him, isn't there? Because he came through the youth there. Yeah. He saw the club go through difficult times. And to be a hero in your own, I mean, very few players and managers get to be that, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Isn't that so bizarre? Like, you grow up loving a club, you know, you grow up adoring it, and then all of a sudden, like, everyone's going wild for you.
Yeah, yeah.
What must, I can't even imagine what that feels like. I can't imagine.
I love the thing with Imanol Moose, where he said he's going into fan mode.
Yeah.
But then when you read about what he says, what his family have to go through, his wife and his kids, and how they've had to deal with him in this time, you know what I mean? And
going home with a mask on.
Exactly. And dedicating it to him and the fans singing outside his apartment.
It's incredible.
It's the kind of story that you want to hear more of, that kind of stuff with football.
Because it's football.
Yeah.
He reminded us what football is, like the community. Like, you know, there were times when, and you don't expect players to live in the same street as a lot, because they can afford, like, you know, frankly, they can afford bigger houses. But there is that sense of being approachable, being embedded, that does feel important.
Yes.
And it's like he took us back to that. And I know, because football isn't really about what he did in that press conference anymore. It's not that. Watching him in that press conference reminds me of if Frankie de Jong and De Ligt and Donny van de Beek had stayed at Ajax for like a couple more years and actually won that Champions League. Wow. You know, it was almost a vision of like, what's that film, Sliding Doors, when football goes in a different direction and that's the football we could have ended up with.
Yes.
Like, that's how football's meant to look.
I always think if Holland won the World Cup in 74 and then 78, the Stadio's got to do something. What would
different
football
universe,
have been like
universe.
with that kind of football if they won in 74 and then again in 78?
We'd be playing the World Cup final on Mars. We would. It'd be so advanced. It'd be high-speed transfer.
Honestly.
So we talked about Imanol, but there's you. Obviously, you've got a very close relationship with Arsenal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for you winning trophies, how did that feel?
Oh my gosh. Again, like I've explained it so many times, that people feel that I support Arsenal simply because once I went in, I fell in love. But it comes from my dear, from David Rocastle. You know, we're talking about early 80s, very early 80s when he went there as a kid. And so you love them. So you start watching them. Yes, the first game I ever went to was Millwall, but you know, it wasn't the team. It was just I'm affiliated to the club simply because I went there when I was 10 or something. But when I got to Arsenal, right, knowing that they were already champions twice in the last 3 years, 89 and 91, and thinking I'm going to win stuff. And then the first thing I won was the League Cup.
Right.
You know, it's just being in a dressing room where you win, and the happiness is just looking at people's faces. And then you go, you win the FA Cup, and then you see what it means, because it's when I won the FA Cup, obviously the 1990 was amazing with Palace, but we lost. When I won it and you go there to win it for Arsenal and you say, I want to go there and win things. And then when you win it, it's just seeing people's faces. Obviously they'd already won. I hadn't won anything. And everybody was kind of looking at me, because especially when we won the FA Cup and I I scored as well in both of those games. Right. I remember afterwards, I remember sitting in there and you know when the tears just well up in you? I was just so happy because I've watched the FA Cup since I was like seven. First one's Leeds and Chelsea. Then Arsenal in 71 when they Charlie George with his celebration. It's the first time I saw
that
celebration and stuff like that. So I've been watching it since then. So I remember the guy saying, look at Wright, he's crying. Oh, Wright, he's got his medal. So it was really weird. But like to win it for Arsenal was amazing. Obviously, I think that in the end, winning the Premier League and lifting the Premier League in front of the North Bank. And it's like the moment when I remember when I'd done that, the noise, Moose, because they knew what it meant to me as well. Because they knew how much I loved the club. They knew what it meant. And I remember when I raised the Premier League, that was a moment that I don't think I've ever had before or ever had after, because it just felt so fulfilling and amazing. And they knew what it meant to me. And what I went there for, it happened, you know, the dream, and for playing and doing it for
Arsenal.
And
the two cups as well, the cup double. Yes, that's like a kind of like a double hit, like a double shot.
Yeah, it was a double hit. But like, remember, I wanted to win. And then sitting in the dressing room when with the Cup Winners' Cup, when we won that one, when Alan Smith scored the winner, was again, in the end, I just got involved in the celebrations. No one would have thought that looking at me in the bath with the guys that I didn't play.
I'm not one of these people that says, I hate modern celebrations. I don't. I love the fact that players have got like rehearsed celebrations now.
Yes.
But I was watching highlights from games like, you know, a few decades ago. And what's interesting, seeing how they said it, because this is before the era of rehearsed celebrations. So what you get to see is the unfiltered joy because they don't know what to put with it. They don't have a moment for when you're in front of 80,000 people, okay, I'm going to do this move. So it's just, you just see the joy exploding out of them. Mm. And what you remind me of when you talk, do you remember that Marco Tardelli goal when he scores for Italy in the final of 82?
Moussa, it's amazing you've mentioned that because that is what I base everything on in respect of passion and sheer, just pure adrenaline and in the moment. That is it. The Marco Tardelli celebration.
You see it. And even think of it now when he scores, it's the opening goal, isn't it? In the final against West Germany, as they then were. And he hits that. It's a glorious strike, of course.
Left foot,
and
you
just see him turn away and you're like, oh my gosh, he's going. And you just see that his entire body, it's like he's crying.
He is.
It's like he's crying with every part of his body. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you're crying because you're like, that's how every 5-year-old, 6-year-old cries in the playground when they think of scoring that goal. Yeah. And he's been scoring, you realize he's been scoring that goal for 20 years.
God almighty. Moose, I'm so pleased you mentioned that celebration, because if you had to say a celebration that is just pure, it's got nothing, it's nothing else, because even when you're about to score a goal, Moose, when you feel like I'm about to score here, he scored the goal, but there was nothing in his body or in his mind or anything that he's thinking, this is what I'm going to do when I celebrate. It happened. When it happened, he ran away and he was actually shaking his head saying no. He was saying no. Yeah. No,
he cannot believe this. He cannot believe that of all the people that have ever lived, have ever played football, he has got to play in a World Cup final
and score.
And he's been. That's what he sees. Like, I cannot believe this has happened to me. I cannot believe this is my life. And some people might say, "Well, you can never come down from there. Like, you can never top it after that." Well, that's the point. You don't need to top it. Like, I don't think Marco Tardelli's paid for drinks since 1982.
Wow. Just to finish this off, Moose, going back to Imanol.
Yeah.
And you could feel him in that room, whether there's people in there or not. You could see his neck. The celebration, the way he was screaming what they sing, you know what I mean? Sociedad, and
beautiful.
And then at the end, he clapped. And it was beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
When he was doing that, it's like he filled the stadium with that. Mm. All of a sudden, the stadium felt full. The press room felt full. Mm. It was like all of a sudden, you imagined all the fans at home in their social distance gatherings, you imagine them just going wild.
Can imagine them watching that at the time.
Do you know what it's like? Okay, there was a band called Zambula. It was a Ugandan hip hop, group, not a hip hop group. That was an amazing band. And I went to a festival. I think it was Glastonbury 07, right? Got out of my tent because the sun was burning through the tent. And I get out and go around and I hear this incredible band playing. Incredible band. And I go around the corner. You know what? They were playing to basically an empty field. Mm. And they were playing the gig of their lives, and watching him do that reminded me of them. Yeah. It was like, he managed to generate that much passion that actually, and with this band playing, after about 10 minutes, yeah, like 20, 30 people had come to just dance in this empty field in front of them. And he was just smiling on stage, like smiling. Yeah. And Imanol reminds me of that moment of, I don't care what this circumstance has forced upon me. Yeah. I don't care that I don't get to celebrate in the ideal context. I don't care that I don't have a full crowd of people screaming my name. I'm going to do this because it matters. I'm going to mark this because it matters. And this, that to me, this, that's football to me.
Absolutely. Flowers for Imanol, man.
Flowers.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
Moose, I was on the way up to do Match of the Day, and I was in the car just thinking about just the players and everything, and obviously the top player. I'm thinking about Ronaldo, right? And I'm thinking about what Ronaldo's doing in respect of staying relevant, the fitness, the goals, everything what he's doing, trying to make sure that he's not only available for obviously these Euros, which he is, but 2022 in Qatar, right? And I was looking at his unbelievable longevity at the moment and how he still looks amazing and he's still right up there. And I'm looking at the Portuguese players and team that's around him that seem to be, Moose, coming to the fore at the perfect time for someone like Cristiano Ronaldo, who you know is trying to win the World Cup. That's it. Because off of the back of the Euros, what they won, and let's face it, in the fact he didn't have a role to play in that at all. They won it without him, that particular. Yep. But I could feel it. And I was just in the car, like I say, going up Moose, just thinking, this guy is planning to win the World Cup in 2022.
Of course he is, and he should be planning to with that squad. He should be, because it's perfectly designed for him. You look at, like, you've got Fernando Santos. He won the Euros with them. Mm. He's been in charge since 2014, right? So he won the Euros with Portugal. Mm-hmm. Then he won the Nations League, which is a big deal, right? Like 2019. With a squad where you've got Ronaldo integrated. He was integrated in 2016, of course. He was right at the center of things in 2019. He scored a hat-trick in the semi-final against Switzerland in the Nations League. Yes. He's still dangerous at, like, international level. And now you've got this great option where you've got a perfectly fluid Portugal team. They can play the flowing stuff if he's not there.
Yes.
But if he's there, they can grind out the result. And this is the thing. The beauty of Portugal at the moment is they don't mind doing it ugly.
You have to.
There's a lot of pressure.
You have to when you're winning those,
Right, there's a lot of pressure on other countries, to play a certain style. But he has the Deschamps thing of he doesn't care. Mm-hmm. Didier Deschamps knows that when France have that World Cup sitting in the trophy cabinet, no one's going to care how pretty it looked at certain points, because it wasn't always pretty.
Nope.
Santos has that luxury. He doesn't mind using Ronaldo in slightly more defensive formations, less fluid formations, because he knows that Ronaldo, to your earlier point, he's the person that doesn't take the half step before toe poking it. And that is a rare quality. If you look at that Portugal squad, a lot of people say, oh, are they better without him? Well, who are their goal scorers actually under immense pressure? We know that André Silva's scoring lots of goals right now for Eintracht Frankfurt. Yes. It's very different doing that to doing that in a quarterfinal.
Yeah, in a semi.
In a semi, in a final, right.
Will Ronaldo recognize when you look? Because I feel that Biden, as much as I do like him, and I hear you guys talk about him all the time on Stadium, João Felix, and he's got to step up there even more to that level. Because, like, remember, we're talking about somebody who costs 100 and odd million. What was it? 126 million. And let's face it, up to this point, as good as he is and what he's doing, we've not seen him emerge into, João Felix.
Right.
That's got to happen at some stage. Now, I'm thinking by 2022, hopefully he'll have got to even higher standards of what he's capable of doing to win the World Cup. Will Ronaldo, the point I'm trying to make is, give those guys the space to do their stuff?
I think so.
I remember doing with the World Cup with him in 2018. Mm. I remember there was times I was doing it for Fox, and I watched a game in particular where there were so many more options, and wherever he turned up, they would literally turn and look for him, give it to him instead of getting it forward, going forward to do the guy. They would look for him. That can't happen. You know, just because he's on the pitch, these guys have got to express, they've got to do it. He's got to be the finishing touch. He's got to be the icing. let them do their stuff. And then when they need the match winner, he's in that last third of the pitch to do his stuff instead of being the fulcrum of everything. Like, give it to me now. Dude, he's got to let that happen.
I think he will. Do you know why? Because if you look at like the 2016 Euros, in a weird way, the best thing could have happened for the country in long term was that they won without him on the pitch. Mm. He went off so early in that final and Portugal still ground it out against France. Yeah. That was a very big power move in a way for the rest of his squad mates, right? Now, obviously, they win the Nations League. He doesn't score the winner in the final. Guedes scores the winner in the final playing through the middle. Mm. And, you know, Portugal then beat Croatia 4-1 without him in the team with that fluid formation you're talking about. So Santos has a really nice dynamic where he's like, this lot know they can do it without me if they have to. But they also, there may be certain contexts in which he's necessary where he's needed. Like, you look at that, for example, the World Cup semi-final, Spain-Germany in 2010, I think it was, when Puyol scores the late header. And really at certain points of games, there's only certain players that get it done. Mm. So I wonder if it's going to be a situation where it'll be horses for courses and they might start without Ronaldo, but they'll be like, you're going to get 20 minutes or 25 minutes to just open this whole thing up.
Wow.
And it's selling that. The key conversation for Portugal is going to be selling that proposition to Cristiano Ronaldo. Weirdly enough, I think he's more open to that now than ever. If the conversation's had the right way, I think he's open to it because frankly, like Ryan was saying about Zlatan, I think that here's a guy who is aware of his footballing mortality. Mm-hmm. You don't move to a club like Juve and get things built around you if you're not aware of your footballing mortality. You look at like Chiesa doing all that running for him, Morata.
Yeah.
What he has at Portugal is for Juve is all those runners around him. And if Santos can sell to him, you're going to get 20 premium minutes at the end of each game in the knockout stages. Come on and do what you do.
I can't see that.
I think that's a good sell. You can't see it.
I don't. I just can't see Ronaldo
accepting
bit part. And I think that the only way he probably could accept that, because that is a bit, we're talking about, because the way I was thinking about it, what I'm thinking is that probably is his swan song to the world. That's me.
Right.
That's me. Yeah. And for him to accept 20 minutes, maybe at the end of games, when we're looking at Ronaldo in his last World Cup, so the world wants to see him as well. And who's going to score the goals that's going to keep him out of the team, to keep him on the bench until maybe 20 minutes, half an hour to go? At the moment, who's going to be emerging to do that? Because that's the only way that's going to happen.
Right. Maybe then, look, here's the thing. Qatar's hot.
Yes.
So maybe the games aren't going to play at that speed. Mm. Maybe actually, if you see how Portugal were in the Euros 2016, they were quite defensive. Went to see Portugal-Poland in the quarters, I think it was. And they were like, they were slow and static and he was virtually immobile, but so were all of them. Mm-hmm. So actually maybe that flowing style, even in an air-conditioned stadium, it's still going to be pretty hot.
And can you imagine?
It might play to his strength.
And the thing as well, Moose, can you imagine if they are, let's just say the best possible scenario for Portugal is that they are doing well and it's going great. And then you start seeing Ronaldo warming up, the crowd's going crazy.
Yeah,
That's probably going to affect you as well, an opposing side. And it's probably going to affect you as the Portuguese side, knowing here comes our guy, here he comes.
I think, to be honest, I think this is going to be a real smash and grab tournament, 2022 World Cup. What I mean is all these training routines have been out of whack, all the club football. So we could see again some pretty, how chaotic could that tournament be? Because if these leagues are that chaotic, imagine how chaotic a knockout's going to be. A knockout tournament. Mm. We could see I'm putting out a hot take now. I'm not going to name names, but we could see a wild, even quarterfinal stages where there could be eight teams where like at least four of those countries, I don't know what they're doing there.
Mm.
In a normal World Cup cycle, those four countries aren't in the quarters.
I'd love that.
I would inject it, actually.
I would love that. Is it cut? So that means we'd have to put England in that. Can we put England in that?
Do you know what? I think it might be even more chaotic than that. I think that if England are going to win a World Cup.
We put Scotland, that's chaotic.
I think we need to be ready for the kind of outcome. Like Ryan said, it embraced the chaos.
Mm.
So yeah, England could win the World Cup.
An African team?
Why not? Like,
could you imagine Egypt or something?
Why not? Why not Senegal? Like, yes. Why not?
That'd be awesome.
Because Senegal, they got a taste and they're like, we didn't get enough of a taste. I was like, oh, African team, Senegal. You know what I love about Senegal? They didn't care. That Senegal was so, Senegal walked in the nightclub and they didn't care how racist the bouncer was.
Oh, I love it.
You know, yes, that energy. They're, yes, like, I don't care how racist, I don't care. Oh, oh, sir, sir, that's my table. Yeah. No, that can't be. Yeah, that's
yeah,
my name.
Yeah.
Oh, oh, sorry, Mr. Diop. Yeah, that's my table.
That's me, bro.
That's me. Oh yeah, what do you think, Diop? What did you think? No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not Klaus. I'm Diop. That's me. Okay, okay, sorry. That's it.
That's
they
it.
Walked no in business. With that swagger. So they could go deep into this World Cup. They could.
Wow, love it.
Levels to that.
That's brilliant, man.
Do you know what's funny? There'll be people that listen to this, they'll be like, I know what he's talking about.
Exactly. Because you get that vibe. You get when yeah, the bouncer. I know that bouncer. I love that move. This is a great analogy.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at Empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
Okay, before we go, we got the Champions League's back.
Yeah,
exciting time. What you thinking?
I'm looking forward to Porto like stepping up. You know, there's nice, always like that moment where there's a club that kind of it can go a bit deeper than you expect.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So I'm looking forward to what Porto could do actually. But I want to ask you actually, throw it back to you. Europe for me always had that special. It's a vibe. It's like a close thing you get to go on holiday during a footballing season as a footballer. Like there's something so grand about, you know, playing it. We're playing in Europe. Like, yeah, it's a big thing. How different was it playing in Europe for you? Like how special were those games, especially the later stages in Europe as compared to domestic ones?
It's really exciting, Moose, simply because I remember we had to, when we went to Sampdoria, semi-finals, one of the ones.
Genoa. Oh Genoa, my God, what
honestly.
A town, what a town.
But the thing about it is that it's really strange because at the time, because they had Vieira Cavod, they had Mancini, you know, they were so good, like at the back and Vierkovod, and then Lombarda. They had, the team at the time was really, they were really good. And I found it very difficult to focus on the games we were playing because you knew that we were playing them in the semi-final, right? Because I remember when we played them at home, like we were beating them like something like 3-1. Walter Zenga was in goal.
Zenga.
What Zenga scored against Walter Zenga. I was so legendary, happy because he's one of those as well. When you go onto the pitch of him, Moose, even when they were coming, because when the Italians come, they come off the coach and they look pristine. Every single one of them. No one's tired. They look amazing. They've got something about them. And I remember you'd go and do the tickets and you see them walking in and you see, and I was like, oh God, these lot are just so, they look amazing. Goodness. And so, when you go out, you look at it, you see them, and it's Walter Zenga, man. Roberto Mancini, you know, Tilio Lombardi.
And they look like models. How do these footballers look like models? They don't look like people that actually do anything other than look beautiful for a living.
Yes.
Yeah. How do they do that?
But the point you asked about what it's like, it was a different energy simply because you knew you was going into a, especially when we went to Genoa, that the place was lovely and rustic. It was almost like, you know, the scene in Godfather where they're just walking down that dirt path and it's just really nice.
Yes.
And it's just very much like that. When we went for the walk, it was very placid and calm, right? And then what I notice is when you get to the stadium, it was absolutely bouncing. Where have these people come from? Right. You know what I mean? And the energy, the food was all nice. The waiters are all cool and everything's, it's just different. It's a different energy from just the everyday. When we go to up north, you go up north, you go down to Southampton, it's very ordinary.
It's still quite familiar. The setting is, but yeah, when you go abroad, everything's different. Right?
It's just different. Everything's different. Cause you know, we're having pasta and that in when you go to Newcastle, but when you're having pasta in Genoa, and stuff, you notice it now. You notice here in Italy, you're getting proper food. And it's
the architecture, the feel, all of
everything it. Everything feels different. Really different. And you know that the caliber of player is different. I always found it like, you're stepping up now. This is a different step up. You're stepping up. You've got to be ready. And this is why I was trying, the point I'm making, and I'm making it long-winded, is you feel like I'm going to step up now. And what I'm playing now, I want it to happen so as I could go to that. Because that's what I went to Arsenal for, to play at that level of football. When you're playing against Sampdoria, and even when we went to the San Siro, when we had to play in the Super Cup, when they a proper team, bro. Boban and Massaro, honestly.
People don't talk about Boban enough.
I know.
Don't get me started on like Milan.
Massaro, when we went to Milan, that was, again, you know, you're stepping up. It's just different moves in respect. So, you know, like for instance, You couldn't get away with a bad touch when you got to that level. The touch had to be perfect. It all had to be absolutely perfect. You know, everything was just different. I looked forward to it because that's what I went there for. I wanted to go to another level of football. And when you went to the European games, especially that stage, you knew that you was going to another level. It was brilliant. I loved the preparation. I loved going. I loved the passion of the fans and the fact that you're playing against some real top players.
Do you know, I'm so hyped about this. You know, remember the Rothmans football yearbook? They had those little like, paper yearbooks with all the fixtures. I used to sit and back in my sort of geek days, I'm still a bit of a geek now, but I would read these entire fixture things, all the results from the European season. You could get them each year. They had all the fixtures from all across Europe. And Ian, do you know what I'd do? I would read them all. Then I go and research the towns across Europe that these clubs came from. Right. That's why when I moved to Europe, I knew where a lot of these places were already, like these small towns in Czech Republic as it now is, whatever, because I was so obsessed with like the history of each of these places. Like, you know, you go on a deep European campaign, you're flying out to like Kiev, and you're flying to Bratislava, and you're taking on whatever you encounter. You're not just taking on the team, you're taking on the environment, the architecture, like the food.
You go to Turkey, Moose.
It's incredible.
You go to, because remember, let's say the week before, like the, you just played Norwich and you know what I mean? You go to, and then your next European game is Athens, I think AEK, right? As soon as you get off the plane, there's fans there, you know, they know you're here for that game and they're really passionate. When you get to the stadium, I remember when we got to the stadium, you know, you have to get there early. It was packed and their backs were turned on the stadium and it was packed over that side and they turned their backs. Remember when, what's it called? I can't remember who done it. Man City were doing it. And they were
The Poznan.
But like this, the first time I saw this, this is when we went to just to warm up, Moose.
Yes.
It was full. It was full. Goodness. It was like, and again, it makes you realize this is it. It's European football. This is what it's about. This is different. This is just like, it's intense straight from the start, from the warm up. You're thinking, right, we're in a game here.
Do you know what I want to do one day? I want to talk to players, obviously, including yourself, about bravest European performances. And I don't mean like they were player down with a red card. I mean like going to an environment which felt hostile and come out with an astonishing result. And I always talk to Ryan about my favorite Arsenal victory, which is the 4-1 against Leeds at Elland Road. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite European victories was when Juventus went to Dinamo Kiev in the late 90s and beat them 4-1 with an Inzaghi hat-trick and Del Piero scored a brilliant late half volley and comes up. And afterwards he's sitting there interviewing him. He's standing there in the corridor afterwards and he's like, brilliant, like, you know, it's beautiful, like Juventus club suit in his shades. And they're asking him, how does it feel to be the symbol of Juventus? And I'm thinking, this was like the end credits of like a heist movie. You're dressed like a bank robber, like, you know, the super cool, you've scored. It's like what playing in Kiev at that time of year, it's like minus something. You've gone out in front of 100,000 fans and shut them up 4-1 and you're getting the plane back to Turin. Yeah. That is the most boss
it's
level.
Gangsters, man.
It's incredible.
It's going
like a screenplay. Yeah. It's a screenplay. Did you have a gangster moment in Europe? Ozair, maybe?
Ozair was proper gangster.
Yes.
And it's really strange because at the time as well, and Ozair, they had a player named Corentin Martin. Remember him? I have never seen a midfielder that good. There wasn't a midfielder around at that time that we had played against that I was better than him. He ran Martin Keown ragged. They were brilliant. And we went there, we got a man sent off. And I remember I scored the goal in it, but it was the atmosphere. It was partisan. It was loud. It was, and when we got the man sent off, it was really battened down. This is where someone like Tony Adams comes into his own. Didn't stop screaming and shouting. I was up front on my own, running the channels. And I remember, if you remember the goal, I think it was Tony Adams is the one. He just blasted it down into the channel, and the two defenders, and they both kind of got in a kerfuffle.
Yeah.
And the ball bounced, and I just took it to the left and just blasted it over.
It was a beauty. Yeah.
The goalkeeper's name was Cool, I think. Something like that, his name.
Fabian Cool.
I think that's his name. You know, when you see a goal, Moose, especially me, when I see it, I said, could he have saved that? Because I hate a goal that like you think a good goalkeeper would save. And when I see that one, he's gone for it with two hands. I don't think it's gone quite into the corner, but I literally just... I hit it with everything and I fell over when I hit it. I don't know if that made it move, but that state, the point I'm making, that particular stadium, when we went down to 10 men and we were up against it, they put us under immense pressure and we beat them 1-0. And that was, I remember that when you mentioned about doing the interview and feeling, that's what it was like. It's like, it's like when you go somewhere, let me tell you exactly what it's like. The end of First Blood, when John Rambo, he's got the coat on, and they, just, you know, he's caused all this carnage. He's got the coat on, and they're just walking him out. No one could touch him. Just walking him out.
That is amazing. When you're leaving the lions, then with the hate, you put your head in the lion's
and
mouth.
They can't touch you.
They can't touch you. That is amazing. That is a vibe.
You know, that's what it's like. It's like going to. It's like us going to play Millwall when in my early days at Palace. You go and play Millwall. They are killing you with abuse in everything. They're standing there and at the end, you're just walking off and you can see, you can feel the abuse, but they literally can't do nothing because you've just gone there and you've torn their hearts out and you just have and you just leave. That's what it was like with Auxerre. It was beautiful.
Oh, well, there we go. Your moment in Europe.
That's my gangster moment. Listen, Moose, what are you doing for the rest of the week, man?
I'm going to get a lot of work this week. I've got some edits coming back on some work I'm working on. Got another big project I'm launching in a couple of weeks. So yeah, I'm back to the admin.
And it looks like as well, cool. Moose, that we might be out of this not too long. So it looks like Stadio Wright's house in Berlin at some stage is going to happen. I'm coming out.
That'd be amazing.
You know what I want to do as well? I really want to try and do it where I could bring my wife and even my girls because they need to come to Berlin.
Yeah, we'll show them around, of course. Show you all around. It's been amazing. Man.
So listen, take it easy in your beautiful city.
Thank you so much.
Until next time, Moose. I love you, my friend.
Always a pleasure. Catch you soon.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for listening, guys. Thank you very much, Moose Okwanga. We'll see you again next week. I'm feeling mailbaggy, but I don't know what's going on, but we'll see how it goes next week. But take it easy, guys. I love you. Thanks for listening and have a good week. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday. I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.